All right, we're getting here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Bet. Elut varim asurim limkor lo'ovid kochavim. These are items that you cannot sell to an ovid kochavim. This is year-round. There are different possibilities as to why you can't sell it to them all year-round. It's either because these items are in particular used for avodah zarah, and so therefore you can assume if a person gets their hands on them, they will use them any time of the year to give them, either because of their rarity, that they're not found so much, or because these are items that are associated specifically with avodah zarah. So now, we're not going to define all the items, because that's exactly what the Gemara is going to do, is go through each of these items. The first one is istrobalin. The Gemara will define what it is, but within this word, you can already see the word strobe, something that is oblong or circular in nature, and we'll discuss what that is in the Gemara. Ubenot shuach, upetutrot, ulevona. So those, we'll see, benot shuach, seemingly are a type of fig. We'll see a discussion in the Gemara. Tutrot, the Gemara will discuss, but it seems like those are stems. Ulevona is frankincense. Betarnagol levan, a white animal. And obviously we know that white animals in general were used in terms of worship of avodah zarah. And here in particular, the white chicken, the white rooster, was used frequently in the avodah zarah. So you can't sell it to them. Rabbi Domer, mutar lo limkor tarnagol levan ben atarnagolim. If it happens to be that you have a whole coop full of chickens that you're selling him, and there happen to be white ones in there, you can sell him as part of the totality of the quantity of chickens that you're selling him. Bizman shebifnei atzmo, if it's alone, then koteya et etzba'o umochro lo. Then you just cut off its finger, and you sell it to him. Because as long as you're moving over, they're not going to bring it as a korban, and then you don't have a problem anymore of a zara. Obviously, the issue here is lifnei iver, lo titen mikhsho. Because if you give it to him, he's going to use it in the worship or practice of avodah zarah. Because Bnei Noach are makpid on mechusar eiver, not only because the Shiva mitzvah Bnei Noach have that, but also because they were makpid in their pulchan, in their worship, not to bring animals that were missing in eiver. Bishar kol advarim, staman mutar, any other item or other objects, if he does not specify, you can sell it to them. Uperushan asur. If he tells you, that's seemingly what it says over here, that he's going to use it for avodah zarah, you can't sell it to him. The Gemara's going to have to deal, isn't that obvious? If he tells you he's going to use it for avodah zarah, then you can't sell it. Rabbi Meir Omer, af dekel tav, vichatzav, v'niklav or niklas, asur limkor l'abdei kochavim. So also these additional items, which the easy one to look at is dekel tav means a good palm tree, and the Gemara will discuss the other two, the chatzav and the niklas, as to what they are that are restricted against selling to the Ovdei Kochavim. So Gemara asks right away, my Yitzrobalim, what is this Yitzrobalim that we're speaking about? Tornita. So Rashi over here says, Tornita is min eres. It's one of the cedars. The truth is that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and in other places says that Asara Erezimim. There are 10 different types of eres, and then it goes on to list them. One of the Erezim, the eres is mentioned, Rashi was over here, Behishita. That is the shita. The shita is either a pine or a cypress. And that is way Rashi explains the tornito over here, that it's a pine or a cypress. Tosafot disagrees with that. We'll come back and discuss why Tosafot disagrees with Rashi. But for now, we're going to assume that it is some tree like a pine or a cypress. Rimini, is that really true? Osufi alehen, they added onto them the alexin, vitstrobalin, muxasin, ubnot shuach. So here you have a breita that is brought. It's a breita that, as you can see, has no cross-reference anywhere else. It obviously picks up in the middle of the breita, and we don't have the information as to what the beginning of the breita was. Contextually, you can figure out what it's speaking about is that it's speaking about Shvi'it, speaking about the Shemitah year, and it's saying that they added on top of whatever it was, these items, in addition, that they're also restricted on Shvi'it. So now, these items, the way the Balei Tosafot explained it, and other Rishonim have variations of this, is that these are items that you would have thought do not have Kedushat Shvi'it associated with them. That's either because they are such poor quality fruit, or because they grow in the wild, and they're not really a domesticated plant or growth, and therefore they would be not be subject to Shvi'it. Or the Balei Tosafot later are going to suggest because they grow over multiple years, and therefore you would think there's no Shvi'it associated with them. There is the Ravid who says that you would have thought that there is no biur associated with them, and that this doesn't have to do with the Kedushat Perot Shvi'it, but rather whether it's Kaleh, the Chaya, Minasadeh. There are these things that can be eaten by the animals And therefore, once they are finished in the field, you'd also have to eliminate them in the house. So the fact that they have Kedushat Shvi'it is a surprise, and that's what it means, Hosifu Aleihem. They added these items to say that they are also under the restriction of Perot Shvi'it, Kedushat Shvi'it. The items that they added on were Alexin, which is a species of pistachio, it's strobalin, which is what we're looking for, then Muchsisin, which we'll see is possibly a species of fig, Ubenot Shuach, as well as Benot Shuach. V'salkadatcho, it's strobalin tornita. If you think the strobalin is really a tornita, tornita mi'ita b'shvit. Why does tornita have any issue with regards to shvit? V'atanya, don't we have a breita? Zaklau, here's the principle. Again, here, it's a breita that's brought. We don't have any mishnah that says it. That's why we don't have a tanan over here. But it's a breita that says, Koshi yesh lo ikar, yesh lo shvi. Anything that has a base or a root has shvi. Koshi ein lo ikar, ein lo shvi. Anything that does not have an ikar does not have shvi. The way Rashi explains this is, when you have an ikar, hamitkayim ba'aretz bimotag shamim. This is something that stays throughout the winter. Kigon, shuim, dulim, kiyotzeben. All these items that are gourds and all these things that have a root in the ground, that stays in the ground, and they can even stay there from year to year, and the item can grow back again. So that just means ikar. Ikar means that it's a rooted item that can re-sprout annually. Then it's something that has shvi'it. Something that doesn't have an ikar doesn't have shvi'it. This is the reason the Baalei Tosafot don't like Rashi's explanation, is because if you explain that tornita is a pine or a cypress, since when do they not have an ikar? Since when do they not have roots that stay there, or a base or a trunk that stays there from year to year, that is in the ground? Doesn't seem to make so much sense. In addition, the Baalei Tosafot say that according to Rashi's explanation of Yesh Lo Ikar and Ein Lo Ikar, had is wheat and barley chayav in Perot Shvi'it or Kedushat Shvi'it. Wheat and barley are an annual crop that is picked out. So why is it that they're considered to be a problem here of Shvi'it, according to Rashi? For that reason, they reject Rashi's explanation. The Baalei Tosafot then come up with an alternate view over here. B'chein Perish Rabbeinu Tam, classic way that the Tosafot deal with these issues, is Trei Gavna Tornita Ninu. There are two different types of tornita. Min Adama Ke'en Kavrita. That this tornita over here is not a growth, it's not an item, but rather, it's a type of earth. That is gafrit. It is pitch or sulfur that's in the ground. Shein la yikar shorish bakarka. It is not rooted in the ground. So even though it's shvi'it, then you would think anything associated with the ground would have kedushat shvi'it. What it's telling you is that the pitch or the sulfur is not something that's subject to shvi'it, because it's not something that grows out of the ground. It doesn't grow in the ground. It's just collected there. It's sitting in the ground. So that's something you can take out because it doesn't have a root. Not in the summertime, not in the wintertime. Tvua, wheat, at least has roots during the summertime. When it's growing, then it's there and it has roots in the ground, and that is subject to shvi'it. So the Baalei Tosafot claim that it is a type of earth here, and takes it totally away from what we were thinking. And so that's why the question here is, according to Rashi, the tornita is not subject to shvi'it because it doesn't root in the ground, which is difficult, and that's what the Tosafot are bothered by. If a tornita is really a pine or a cypress, they do root in the ground. And how is it possible that you could argue that it doesn't have a root or a base or a trunk that remains from year to year? So then the Baalei Tosafot offer the alternative, which is the fact that it's adama, or it's some sort of pitch or sulfur that's in the ground. And then the question, according to Rashi and the Baalei Tosafot, is you have a breita that's telling us that they're subject to shvi'it. It's strobilin are subject to shvi'it. So according to Rashi, the cypress or the pine is not subject to shvi'it. So then why are you saying it's strobilin is restricted in shvi'it? According to Baalei Tosafot, if you're talking about pitch or sulfur, they're not subject to shvi'it. How come they're included in the breita that says that they are restricted? So that's the question. Those that come to the defense of Rashi explain that koshein lo ikar doesn't mean that it has a permanent state in the ground, a permanent rooting in the ground. That's the only thing that is subject to shvi'it. But rather, these are items that are subject to bi'ur shvi'it, where the Ritva explains that what it means is ikar, something that has roots in the ground, will be subject to bi'ur shvi'it, because after you pick it, there's still a remnant of it in the field that the animals can eat. And if there is kala lechayam in a sedeh, if what the animals can eat in the field ends, then the fruits that you have in the house also then are subject to bi'ur, and you have to remove them from the house. And so what they're suggesting over here is that kosher yeshu ikar, something that's eaten by animals, that is something that is subject to shvi'it. Something that's not eaten by animals, either because it's too hard, or because it's eaten by people, and they take the whole thing out, then that's not going to be subject to bikur shvi'it. And that's the problem with the tornita. The tornita is not subject to shvi'it, either because it's too hard for the animals to eat, or because humans eat the roots of it, or whatever it is of it, and not the animals. And therefore, it's not going to be subject to bi'ur shvi'it. That's how they explain it according to Rashi. There's a third explanation of the Ra'ivid, who suggests that the problem here is that these are items that grow, they're soft at some point, and then harden over time. And so that they have shoots that come out of them, and then the shoots that are hardening after a time, they're no longer edible at that point in time. So when they're a lulav, they're a shoot, do you eat them? Well, that depends on whether it has an ikar or doesn't have an ikar. Meaning that if it's something that replenishes itself, regrows afterwards, then people eat the shoots, because the shoots are not integral to the growth of the item, it can grow again by itself. If the shoot itself is the ikar, and if you take it away, the thing won't survive, then people aren't going to eat the shoot, because then the item won't remain afterwards. And so that's the problem over here. The tornita is something that you wouldn't eat the shoots from, because it doesn't have an ikar. It's not something that would replace itself or regenerate itself. And so therefore you wouldn't eat the lulavim of the tornita. And then the question is, how is come it subject to shvi'it? Or why is it subject to bi'ur on shvi'it if that is the case? So now, the Gemara says, Ela amar Rav Safra, peirei da'arzo. We're speaking about the fruits of the erez. V'chein ki'at Rav amar Rav Elazar, peirei da'arzo. We're speaking about the fruits of the erez. Depending on what you think the eretz is over here, will determine what fruits you're thinking. Rashi over here, you can see paradizer is a gallnut. Because it is a gallnut, which, and it's a type of fruit that looks like a nut that grows on the oak tree. And he claims that that's what the fruit, the paradizer is. The other possibility is what? You were suggesting, if you think it is possibly a oak or a cypress, it could be that it's acorns that you're speaking about here. Or, if you think it's a pine, it might be that you're speaking about pine cones over here, which would be something that they possibly used in Avodah of the Avodah Zarah, these pine cones, which were more unusual to get your hands on, and they would have been something that was used in the Avodah of the Avodah Zarah. You can see in the Balei Tosfot, he says, Perish Rashi Glonin, Hu Machal Chazirin. Rashi says, gallnuts, and gallnuts are food for the pigs. And the Rashba, Mishim Rashi, Perish Perot Ilan Shukorin Pine. These are the fruits of the pine tree. V'yeshbo garinim. They have nuts, pine nuts. Vein roi la'achila, but it's not something that is edible. So then, it's peirei da'arza would then either be according to Rashi, gallnuts, pine nuts, or possibly pine cones, or if you think it's speaking about an oak or a cypress, it's also possibly acorns. Although if you look in the Rambam, the Perusha Mishnayot, he says that the itstroblim hein in karim baravi, katsam kadishi, vein ptanim minatznubarim. They are smaller than the tznubarim, which are pine nuts. He's saying that they are something smaller, pine nuts, but seemingly he agrees that what we're speaking about here is some form of pine. Or a spruce. Whatever it is, it's now a paradarza. According to the Balei Tosafot, what the Gemara is doing is saying, oh, you got the tornita wrong. It's not the tornita that's pitch and sulfur, it's the tornita that is the tree. And therefore it does have something that's subject to shvi'it. Because it's the other tornita that we were speaking about over here. And in that way, you would be subject to shvi'it, because we're talking about a pere, we're talking about a fruit, but also could be subject to this restriction of selling it to them, because it could be something that's used in their practice of Avodah Zarah. Benot Shuach. So what are the Benot Shuach? Amar Rav Barchan, Amar Rav Yochanan, Te'ene Chivarto. These are white figs. The Balei Tosafot are perplexed by this. Tosafot points out that you have to conclude here that the Benot Shuach are a low-quality fig, because that's why in the first place they thought not to include them in the Isser of Shvi'it. And only later on did they add them in, even though they were a low-quality fig. And that Tosafot has a problem with, because in the Gemara in Shvot, it speaks about the Benot Sheva, which in our Gersa Bar Gemara is Benot Shuach. Nevertheless, the Balei Tosafot say Benot Sheva and Benot Shuach are synonymous. It says over there that they're like a delicacy of dessert. So why over here is it calling Benot Shuach something that is a low-quality fruit, and over there it's talking about a delicacy in terms of Benot Shuach. So in the end, the Balei Tosafot suggests that from all this, it makes it sound like the Benot Sheva or the Benot Shuach are high-quality figs. So the Balei Tosafot back away from the original assumption and say in the end that these are all good-quality figs, and they are a pre-chashuv. So then why in our case would you have thought they're not subject to Shvi'it? Or why in the case of Demai, Do we not worry about the Ami Aretz? The Bible will give reasons for each one of these items why we wouldn't consider or worry about the problems. But no, Chuach in general are very high quality, delicacy type figs. In our instance over here, the reason that you wouldn't have thought Shvi'it applies to them is because they bud, emerge as a fruit in 1 year, but only picked in a different year. And since their Chanata and their Likita are totally separate, you would have thought they're not subject to Shvi'it. The conclusion in the end was, yes, they are still subject to Shvi'it, and we go bud their Chanata after the year in which they blossomed or they began to emerge. And for that reason, when it comes to figs, their Shemitah year is not the Shemitah year, but actually the year afterwards, because that's the year in which they actually are picked. The ones that budded or blossomed during the Shvi'it are only picked in that next year. And so there's a delayed Shvi'it for the figs. As far as the Ami Aretz, the reason that we don't worry about them taking off Shemot HaMasrut from them is because they are found in the wild. These are fruits that are plentiful in the wild. Therefore, they have no reason not to take off Tumot HaMasrot because they can find them everywhere. And so the ones that are around their gardens, they end up taking off Tumot HaMasrot because it's not a big cost or a big loss to them to take off Tumot HaMasrot. So that's one way the Baalei Tosafot deal with it. The only problem with that whole explanation is that the Gemara here concludes that these are white figs. Yet in the Gemara in Brachot and the Gemara in Nedarim, it makes it sound like Bnei Chuach are not black figs and not white figs. So then how do we reconcile all of that? Therefore, the Baalei Tosafot come to a conclusion. The gimel minei teinim heim. The three different types of teinim. Your regular figs, which are black and white regular figs, that's one series of figs. Then they are the Bnei Chuach. The Bnei Chuach have two types of figs. They're the Bnei Chuach that are a high quality or a delicacy, and they're the Bnei Chuach that are ro'ot. And the truth is that they differentiate in the terminology that's used. When it calls it a delicacy, the Bnei Chuach, it uses the term Bnei Chuach. And when it calls the Bnei Chuach Chuach, then it's speaking about the lower quality fig, the one that is not a delicacy. And the terminology of Bnei Chuach is like a borrowed term that is because of the Midrash that says Adam Arishon, the Eitz Hadaat, Tov V'ra, that he ate from was a fig tree. And that's why later on the Alei Teinar used to cover him up because that tree was the only one willing to offer him because he had sinned and eaten from that tree. And therefore, the bad figs are called Bnei Chuach after the sin of Adam HaRishon, even though he probably ate the good ones. But nevertheless, they use Bnei Chuach. And the better Bnei Chuach are known as Bnei Sheva. And that way, there are three categories, and we can deal with all the questions that we had in terms of the different figs that we're speaking about. The Rebbeinu Tam goes in a different direction and explains that Mechassisin, Bnei Chuach, is actually one term here. It's not two separate items. And the Mechassisim is a type of Bnei Chuach that are the lower quality ones. And that's what Rashi explains in other places, that Mechassisim are Bnei Chuach. And that way, then the Rabbeinu Tam solves the problem by joining the words Mechassisim and Bnei Chuach together in order to make it that this is a specific species of Bnei Chuach, which are the low quality ones. And therefore he says here, that's why it says Mechassisim, Bnei Chuach, and he says that's also the Girsa and Shvi'it, and that would be the same one in Demai, which is that these are Mechassisim Bnei Chuach, which are these low-quality types of figs, versus plain Bnei Chuach, which are a high-quality or delicacy type of fig. And for whatever reason, the white figs were special in terms of Avodah Zarah, and so they used them, whether they were high-quality or low-quality, as long as they had this white associated with them, that they used them in the Avodah Zarah. They weren't so worried about the quality because they weren't eating them. They were using them as Tokrovet Avodah Zarah, either for decoration or for putting them in front of the Avodah Zarah. This large Tosfot is trying to square away this appearance of Bnei Chuach in all different contexts, sometimes as a delicacy, sometimes as something that is a low-quality fruit. And he resolves that either by saying one is Bnei Chuach, one is Bnei Chuach, or that Bnei Chuach themselves have different qualities. There's a high quality and a low quality. Or the possibility of what the Rebbeinu Tam says over here, it's Mechassisim Bnei Chuach. It's a specific type or species of Bnei Chuach that is that low quality Bnei Chuach. Although the Rambam gives a totally different explanation for Bnei Chuach, in Bnei Perish Mishnayot, he says it's min miminei shikma. It's a type of sycamore. So now it says, Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, bit bitrutro tehem shanu. That is only with their stems. So we saw in the Mishnah, upetutotrot, which are stems. The question is, what do the stems mean? That's the explanation over here. Rabbi Bar Chana says, the petutotrot mean the figs have their stems in them. For whatever reason, if the stems were pulled out, which usually left a hole or pulled some of the fig out, they were no longer usable or proper for the Avodah Zarah. As Rashi says over here, Shetolinu otam yifnei ovdat kochavim v'darkam l'ovdan v'kach. That's part of the worship of the Avodah Zarah, is to hang them up, but you need the stems to hang them up with. Others just suggest that they like to bring a korban that is whole. Also, you only bring figs that are whole. The stem's pulled out, it's no longer a full or whole fig, and therefore it's not presentable, or it's not used in the worship of the Avodah Zarah. So when it says in the Mishnah, upetutrot, it doesn't mean that that's another category of item. It's explaining to you which benot shuach are problematic, which figs are problematic, the ones that have their stems in them. Livona, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Livona Zakah. It's not all frankincense. It is Livona Zakah. It's the very fine frankincense that was used in the worship. Tana, umukulam mochin lehen chavila. You're allowed to sell them a full sack worth of this stuff. Bekama chavila. What's the quantity that's included in a sack? Perish Rav Yehuda ben Betera. Ein chavila pchuta mishlosha manim. It cannot be less than 3 maneh. V'leichosh dimo azil umizavin d'achrine umakriatre. Okay, so we're not worried about him. But what about him reselling it to people who are going to use it for Avodah Zarah? Am Rabbaya lifnei makvedinan. We're only worried about lifnei yiver, lo titem yekshol. Al lifnei de lifnei. We're not going to speak about 2 steps away. Derivative, lifnei yiver lo dimisho, lifnei diflei, no makbedinan. We don't worry about. Right, so let's talk about the reason that you're allowed to sell it in large quantities, is that you're allowed to sell wholesale quantities of these items. You're not allowed to sell retail quantities of these items. The reason is because retail quantities, in all likelihood, they're going to be used in the practice of Avodah Zarah. You're selling it to a wholesale quantity, that person's not going to use it. He's going to resell it. And since you're selling it to him, and there's no Avodah Zarah being performed with it, there's no problem. Anybody buys in those large quantities clearly is buying it for resale, not for his own purposes or own usage. Yushalmi gets into more detail about that. Depends who you're selling it to. Depends if you're selling it to a priest. Doesn't matter that you're selling in large quantities because he'll just distribute it to the people who need it, or he'll use it for the practice over a period of time. To a doctor, you can sell it to in any quantity. And the people who are stam people, where you can sell these large quantities or these wholesale quantities. The Gemara says, even if you sell it in wholesale quantities, in the end, aren't you a facilitator? Because you're selling wholesale, and you know he's going to sell it retail to the Avodah Zarah. So Gemara says, Alifnei Makpedinan. We are restricted in causing someone to violate or facilitate their ability to do Avodah Zarah. But on the other hand, Alifnei Delifnei, No Makpedinan. When it comes to the next person, you're not responsible for the next person possibly being in violation of Lifnei Iver. So that might be true only with regards to a goy. When it comes to a goy, if you're 2 steps away, then we're going to say that you are restricted against causing him to do an aveira. What you're not restricted in is causing him to cause someone else to do an aveira. What's your responsibility to stop him from doing lifnei iver? There may not be, first of all, any restriction of lifnei iver for a goy. That might be the whole reason here, which is their lifnei iver only applies to a Jew. So you as a Jew can't sell it to someone and facilitate it. But if he's a goy and then he's going to sell it to someone else, he has no din of lifnei iver, so you're not causing him to violate anything. He sells it to someone else, that's already too far away from you. That's an arm length transaction that you don't have anything to do with, and you're not responsible for it. But a Jew, it might be the problem is that if you sell it to him and he sells it to someone else, he's going to be in violation of lifnei iver. So when you sell it to him, you are now facilitating his violation of the iser of lifnei iver. So your lifnei iver lo tidei mikshol is because you're going to cause him to violate lifnei iver lo tidei mikshol, which means that any derivative of you is then a facilitator to someone else in violation, and therefore you would also be subject to it. You could argue that it's not because you're going to cause him to violate lifnei iver, but rather kol yisrael arevim zeh lezeh, which means that you're still responsible to stop him from violating lifnei iver, not because lifnei iver causes another lifnei iver, but simply you have an arevut to stop him from engaging in lifnei iver lo titen mikshol. So if you sell it to a Jew, it would be a problem. There is another issue which will come up later in the Masechta, we've seen it before, which is you're not allowed to sell to a goy kilayim unless it's clearly identifiable. Because the goy might resell the beged to a Jew, and the Jew will not be aware of the fact that there's kilayim in the beged. So you're not allowed to sell it to a goy who will resell it to Jews, because you're going to cause a Jew to be in violation of kilayim. Over there, it doesn't seem the problem is lifnei iver lo titen mikshol. The problem is that through you, you're going to cause someone else to do an aveira down the road. And we don't want you doing things that cause other people to have violations. Even though it may not be a responsibility, it may very well be mechshol, might just be misayel over avera, or because of the fact that they, unbeknownst to this person, they're going to end up with kilayim, and you're causing a mechshol. So that you're setting up something that's going to be a problem down the road, and that may not be mefer, it just may be improper to do so, because you could be causing someone unbeknownst to them to violate the Navera, and we don't want you setting up situations like that. Or you could differentiate based on what the Rid differentiates on the following premise, which is that if the person who's doing the violation knows they're doing a Navera, over there there's a restriction of lifnei iver lo titei mechshol, but there's no restriction of lifnei de lifnei. On the other hand, if the person who's gonna actually do the Avera has no clue they're doing Avera, it's unbeknownst to them, then lifnei de lifnei applies because you become a facilitator that through you, someone else is gonna end up with a problem because you were not careful or you did not take those precautions to not allow them to come into this Isur, which they would have no idea about, either because they don't know about the Isur, the Kilayim that disappeared, or the fact that is they don't know that what is going on is an Isur. And in that case, there's even a restriction of lifnei de lifnei. Clearly here, by goyim, we don't worry about lifnei de lifnei, this double derivative of restrictions. All right, Betana Golovan, can't sell the white chicken or rooster. Amar Rabbi Yonah, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Zvid. Ve'ika dematnei, Amar Rabbi Yonah, Amar Rabbi Zera. Tana Golovan, the guy's walking around and saying, who has a chicken, who has a rooster for sale? Mutar limkor lo Tana Golovan. You can sell him even a white one, because his query was simply that he wants a rooster. He wasn't makbid on color. He simply is looking for someone who has it. Whatever you sell him is fine because he wasn't asking for something in particular. Tana gol levan lemi. He's going around asking who has a white rooster. Then asur limkor lo tana gol levan. Then you can't sell him a white one because the fact that he's particularly looking for a white one is indicative or hinting at the fact that he's probably looking for a avodah zarah. Otherwise, why is somebody looking for a white rooster? None. Our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mokher hu lo tarnagol lavan, ben ha-tarnagolim. You're allowed to sell a white one amongst the other tarnagolim. Hechi dami. What exactly is the case? Ilema de kamar, tarnagol lavan the mi, who has a white tarnagol. If the guy who's looking to buy is saying who has white tarnagolim, afilu ben ha-tarnagolim, nami lo. If he's specifying that's what he's looking for, then why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can you sell it to him? Even if you sell it amongst a large quantity of chickens, in the end, he's clear about why he wants it. He wants it to use it for avodah zarah. He's asking for a white rooster. El alav b'kamar tana gol to me. Tana gol to me. Isn't it a case where he's asking just for chickens generically, roosters generically? V'afilu achi, Rabbi Yehuda ben tana golim in b'fnei atzma lo. And despite that fact, Rabbi Yehuda says you can only sell it if it's in the whole group of chickens that you're selling. But by itself, you couldn't sell it to him. According to the Tanagami, if you sell it amongst a large coop of chickens, that still would not be mutar. And that would now upend what Rabbi Zera suggested. Just as Rabbi Zera said, when you ask for it generically, then you could sell him even a white one. Here we're suggesting that if you ask generically, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say you can only sell it in a package, and the Tanagami says you can't sell it at all. So that doesn't square with Rabbi Zera, because if he was running around asking for a white rooster, there's no way Rabbi Yehuda would let you sell it to him, even amongst other roosters. But says, Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Achama Iskinan, Gond Amar, Ze V'Ze. It's a case where he says, that one and that one. Now Rashi says, Ze V'Ze, does not mean literally pointing to them. Rather, Ze V'Ze means that he's asking for white and black chickens. He's asking for both types of chickens. Brown, black, red chickens, white chickens. He's asking for all different colored chickens. In that case, Rabbi Yehuda says you can't sell it to him as part of a large package of chickens. Because if he just wanted a white chicken, first of all, he would ask for it. Number two is, if he's just looking for the white chicken and now you're selling all these chickens, he's now going to have to expend a large amount of money just to get his white chicken and buy all these chickens he doesn't need. That for sure is not what his intent is, and he wouldn't get engaged in such an activity. According to Rashi, you're just asking for multiple types of chickens. According to other Rishonim, like the Bali Tosfot over here, Zev Zez is pointing to the chicken and saying, I want that one, and that one. Some of them are white, some of them are black, but he's asking for a whole slew of chickens. You can sell them to them, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you sell them all the chickens. You can't sell them a particular chicken, you have to sell them all of those chickens that he pointed to, according to Rashi, to sell them all the chickens of that color that he asked for. Tanya Namiyochi, you have a braita that supports that understanding inside of Rabbi Yehuda. Amri Yehuda, Eimatai, when is that true? Bizman Shamar, Tanagol Ze Lavan. When is it true that where the Tanakhama says that you can't sell it to him? That's when he asked for a white chicken in particular. V'amamar zeh v'zeh. If he says zeh v'zeh, then it is mutar. According to Rashi, that means if he says also black, brown, white chickens, then it's fine to sell them the white amongst the other chickens. Or according to the other Rishonim, if you point to different chickens and say, I want this one, this one, this one, and this one, and it happens to be there's a white one in there, that's fine to sell it in the whole package, according to Rabbi Yehuda. V'afilu amar tarnagol zeh. And even if he says he wants this tarnagol. Now according to Rashi, zeh, again, is lav dafka. Rashi says you're not pointing to it, and therefore Rashi has a different girsa in the Gemara. You can see this in Rashi. V'afilu amar tarnagol zeh lavan. Even if he's asking for a white one, ovi kuchavim shasa mishtel idno. An ovi kuchavim that's making a wedding for his son. Oshayalo chole v'toch beito. Or he has somebody sick in his house, mutar. You're allowed to sell it to him. According to Rashi, if there's a particular event that is associated with the purchase of this white rooster or chicken, that you're allowed to sell it to him because we'll assume it's not being used for Avodah Zarah, it's being used for the particular event. He has a wedding, or he has someone who's sick, and it's used either as a type of refuah, or it's used as part of the celebration of the wedding. So Rashi says, even if he specifies a white one, if there's a purpose that you can determine, then you can sell it to him. The other Rishonim say, Aramar Tarnagol Zeh, and they leave it like that. They say the Zeh means he pointed to the Tarnagol. It says, even if he says Tarnagol Zeh, and the only one he pointed to was a white one, then you can sell it to him if it's for a particular event, if it's for a wedding, or for someone who is sick. Vat Nan, don't we have a Mishnah, Ovi Kuchavim, Shasa Mishtel Ibno? In asur el oto ayom v'oto aish bilvad. Oto ayom v'oto aish mi asur. But if he's making a wedding, we said before that that person is asur on that day. So how can you claim here you can sell him according to Rashi? If he asks for a white tarnagol, how can you sell it to him for his wedding? When we said that the person is making the wedding, it's asur for you to sell it to him. Everybody else you can sell it to, but that person you can't sell it to him because clearly when it came to weddings, they had Avodah Zarah associated with it. They used to be Makriv Takrovit Le Avodah Zarah. And this is clearly being used for that. So that would be the way Rashi explains it. Or according to the other Rishonim, if he points to this, he goes, I want this Tarnagol. It's only a white one. Even though he has a wedding, why should be able to sell it to him? There's Avodah Zarah associated with the wedding. As we said earlier in the Mishnah, that Ovi Kukavim, it's making Mishnah Beno, then you're not allowed to transact with him. Everybody else you can transact. Or even people who are under his dominion, you can trade with. You just can't trade with him. But that means he himself, it's a sword. So Rav Yitzchak Bar Masharsha, bit vizik. Rashi explains over here, one that you're allowed to sell, according to Rashi, if he asks for a white one, is when we're speaking about tvizik. But if it is a wedding, then you're not allowed to sell it to him, because there we worry about takrovet avodat kochavim. A tvizik, according to Rashi, is mishta shel re'ut. It is a get together a social gathering of sorts. Shosim ani arim zeim zeh. That the youngsters make with each other. The Korin, and this tvizik is called kamprovaisha. I actually think that the word there might be either companion or compatriots. Suda of companionship or compatriots that get together. Whether it's a party of sorts, it's a meeting, a place where they meet, or like in Eov. There's this story about his children that they got together for a meal in each other's houses and that they enjoyed each other's company. So that's also this simchat mireyut. Some people even suggest it's associated with the marriage. It's just not about the wedding itself. It's whether it's like the equivalent of sheva brachot or it's the bachelor party beforehand. Whatever it is that they're speaking about here, it's not the wedding itself. By the wedding itself, we do assume that there is avodah zarah and that you can't sell him the item for. For these other types of parties, if he's saying, I'm having this tzvizik, you can buy it, according to Rashi, even if he asks for a white tarnagol. And according to the other Mishnah, if he points to a white tarnagol and says, that one I want, then you can sell it to him because we know there's a particular purpose he has for it. And that purpose does not involve avodah zarah, and that's why you're allowed to sell it to him. Although the Rach reads this last sentence in the Braita in an unusual manner, which brings him to an unusual conclusion. The Baalei Tosfot rely on the Rabbeinu Chananel to disagree with Rashi and say that the zeh here means literally to point at it, rather than to say zeh lav dafka. But then the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel reads it is, v'tarnagol levan ukimna. We say, when is it restricted to sell a tarnagol levan? Zman shomer ovei kochavim mi mocher li tarnagol levan. If he specifically asks for a tarnagol levan, aval ina amar levanim o shechorim, if he says white ones and black ones, v'chlal, just in general, then there's no problem. Vafilu amar. Even if he only says, Tanagol Lavan ze, mochrino. So unlike the Balei Tosfot who say that the Girsayer is Tanagol ze, he says that the Girsayer is Tanagol Lavan ze. And he points to the Tanagol. You're allowed to sell it to him. If he identifies the specific rooster or chicken that he wants, you can sell it to him. The only time you can't sell it to him is in a case where he specifically asks for a white one and doesn't pick out the particular chicken that you're selling to him. And then the last statement of the Braita, Yesh Cholev Bebeito or Mishtel Ibno, is now an independent statement which says that even if he's asking for a white chicken, it'd be mutar to sell him the white chicken for a Cholev or for a Mishtel, even if he's asking in particular for a white chicken. That'd be similar to Rashi's interpretation of that latter part, which is that it's not about that he specified or pointed to a chicken and happened to be white, but he's even asking for a white chicken. Over here, the Rabbeinu Chanano would suggest, like Rashi, that that would be mutar to sell it to him, because there are other uses for this besides Ovadat Kochavim. The Shar Kola Dvarim, Staman Mutar, they don't ask for anything in particular, they just do it generically, that they're buying something that's mutar, Upe Ushan Asur. And if they specify, then it's Asur. My Staman or my Perushan. What does it mean that they buy it generically? What does it mean that they specify? Ilay Mastama. If you say Stama means the Kamar Chite Chavarta, he says, I want to buy white wheat. Perushan Dam Kamar Lo Mdei Kochavim. And then when he Perush, he says, I want to do for the Rezara. Lo Staman Tzricha Lameimar. Dimiz Baminan. You don't have to tell me that in that case, the Stam you can sell to them. The Lo Perushan Tzricha Lameimar. The Lo Miz Baminan. And when he specifies, you don't have to tell me that you can't sell it to him. When he says, I want white wheat, why can't you sell him white wheat? There's nothing in particular about white wheat that would put up your antennae to say that he's worshipping Avodah Zarah. So he says, I want white wheat. It's not one of the items listed in the Mishnah. Of course you can sell it to him. Why would you think otherwise? And if he says, I'm using the white wheat for Avodah Zarah, you would know that you can't sell it to him. There's no chiddush in that whatsoever. And therefore, that can't be what the Mishnah is speaking about. Ela staman de kamar chite. That's the case where he says, I want wheat. Perushan. The kamar chivarta. He wants white wheat. Michlau, the tarnagol, afilu staman namilo. From that you would conclude that when it comes to a tarnagol, even if he didn't specify a white tarnagol, you're not allowed to sell it. And that would be a problem for Rabbi Zeira. Again, Rabbi Zeira said if he just asks for a generic tarnagol, then you're allowed to sell him a white tarnagol because he didn't specify that he wanted a white tarnagol. So Amre, the olam, staman de kamar chite chivarta. Stam case is a case where he asks for white wheat. Upeirushan the kamar lo vedat kochavim, and the peirushan is that he wants it for avodah zarah. Upeirushan it's tricholei, and we need the case where he specifies it. Obviously, in the case where he doesn't specify anything, and he just says he wants white wheat, there's no reason to suspect that he's going to use it for avodah zarah. And since there's no reason to suspect that, then you don't have to worry about selling it to him. It's no chiddush at all. The chiddush is that when he specifies it's for avodah zarah, that you're not allowed to sell it to him. Why is that a chiddush? He doesn't really need it for Avodah Zarah. He is tightly connected in this cult of Avodah Zarah. Just like he is deeply entrenched and involved in this cult of Avodah Zarah, other people feel similar to him about the Avodah Zarah. I'm going to say that I'm part of the club so that these people give me a discount. And that's why he's saying it. So what they're indicating is that, in that case, he thinks that if he announces that he's doing it for Avodah Zarah, not that he intends to do it for Avodah Zarah, but he thinks that he's going to get everybody to give him discounts. Because, like you do today, when you go into certain places and you say you're a member of the club, they give you a discount. Or when people associate with other individuals and have a commonality between them, they're more likely either to help them out, they're more likely to give them a discount, they're more likely to treat them in a certain manner. And that's what he's trying to facilitate over here. He's not trying to use it for Avodah Zarah, he's trying to facilitate a better deal because he's an Avodah Zarah. So you would have thought maybe you could sell it to him anyway because he's just looking for a better deal. Now that he's going to really use it, Kamash Malan, that we don't let you sell it to him anyway because we really are afraid that he might use it for Avodah Zarah. Bai Ravashi, Tanagol Lavan Katua Lami. He's going around saying, I want to buy a white rooster that is missing a limb. Katua, that's missing a finger, missing a leg. I want to buy that. Mahu. Limkorlo, tarnagol lavan, shalem. Can you sell him a tarnagol lavan that has no blemish in it, that has nothing missing from it? Mi aminen mi dekamar katua, lav davodat kovavim kaboi. The fact that he's looking for one that has this blemish or mum in it, that it's missing an aver of some sort, whether it's a finger or a leg, he's willing to buy it because he'll get a discount. It's something that's not valuable for the Avodah Zarah. And he's asking for it because he'll get it cheaper because it's something they can't sell for the higher price. And that's why he's looking for it. Or Dilma, Irume Kamari. Or maybe he's just playing games. He knows that most people are not holding animals that have blemishes or missing limbs to them. And so he says it so that they'll sell him a whole one. He basically got wind of how the Jews deal with these situations. They'll sell it when it's missing something. They won't sell it if it is whole. So now he goes around asking for something that's missing something because he knows now the Jews say, he's not looking for an Avodah Zarah. And then they'll sell me a whole one and I'll end up what I want. So he's using reverse psychology to get what he wants. How do we look at this? Imtim Solomar, if you want to say hi, Irume Kame Arim, that he's playing games here, he's tricking, which is, again, when the Rambam sees Imtim Solomar, that means that the Gemara concluded, that's what it meant. That's the Psak Alocha. So that means that we believe that he's playing games over here. Tarnagol Levan Lemi, Tarnagol Levan Lemi. He goes around looking for a white tarnagol. V'yavolei Shachor, V'shakam. And somebody hands him a black one, and he buys it. V'yavolei Adom, and they hand him a red one, V'shakam, and he buys it. Maulim Korlo Levan. Now you sell him a white chicken or rooster. The fact that he's purchasing any color in the end, does that show you that he doesn't really care about the color? And he was just asking for a white one because he thought it would be better, but he's not really makpid? Or is he again playing games? The fact that he's buying black ones, red ones, and other colors besides the white shows you that he doesn't really want it for Avodah Zarah. Or is he again playing games? He's saying, I want a white one, and he buys a black one, a red one, to throw everybody off, that he's not doing it for a Zarah, and then they'll sell him a white one. Rashi claims that this question is, Alibid Rabbi Yehuda mi ba'ilei hochi. This question is only according to Rabbi Yehuda, below the Rabbanon. And not according to Rabbanon, Rabbanon afilu ben ha-tarnagolim masrei. Even if you sell a white one amongst all the other tarnagolim, it was still a sur. So the question according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you're selling the black one, the red one, and all these others, does that now become like you're selling it amongst the other chickens, and therefore it's mutar, even though he's buying them one at a time, and was specifically asking for a white tarnagol? Nevertheless, the fact that he took red, black, and now white, buying it in general, and that makes it okay. That's a question only in the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. If you look at the top Tosafot, he says, this is questions even according to the Rabbanon, that Asrei ben ha-tarnagolim. The Eagle of Maimer had gone no asrei elu b'sheisham levanim v'shechorim. The reason they over there said it's a sore is because there were white and black ones mixed together. V'amar zeh v'zeh, and he said he wanted both of them. V'az yesh lechush v'datei alavan, and then you have to worry about the fact that he really wants the white ones and just buying the other ones to get access to the white ones. But over here, where when you offer him a black one, he takes it and he has no idea whether he's going to get a white one in the end. Maybe over here, it would be okay, even according to the Chachamim. The Baal Tosafot see this question, even according to the Shita of the Rabbanon. But Rashi sees it only as a question in the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Teku, that we leave unresolved, that we don't know, as to what the din is. Rabbi Meir Omer, Af Dekel, even by a palm tree, and now again, the Gemara is going to have to go through, what were those items that are mentioned? Amar Rav Chista Lev Yumei, Gmirei, Tovadat Kochavim d'Avraham Avinu Daud Mea Pirkei Avin. We have a Mesorah that the book of Avodah Zarah of Avraham Avinu had 400 chapters in it, which speaks to how rampant and pervasive Avodah Zarah was, and therefore they had 400 prakim of Avodah Zarah. V'anan Chamishatnan, we have 5. V'lo Yadinan Maikamrinan. And we can't even figure out, or we don't even know what they mean. Here, our Masechet Avodah Zarah only has 5 prakim. And that is, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchot Melachim, even though it was taken out by the censors, in the modern printings of the Rambam, they've reinserted that which was censored out. But over there, he speaks about the fact that Christianity and Islam, despite the problems with them, and despite the fact that they might be considered Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, they did do something beneficial for the world, which is that they did bring or spread monotheism throughout the world. And therefore, there has been a significant reduction in Avodah Zarah, like the Avodah Zarah of days gone. And they have brought people towards the idea of an intangible God, the idea of monotheistic religion. And therefore, there is benefits to these two religions, which became the two largest world religions, that they are actually bringing people in a direction that moves away from Avodah Zarah. And that might be spoken to by the fact that there used to be 400 prakim of Avodah Zarah, And now there are only five prakim of Avodah Zarah. My kashya, what is the issue that he's bothered by? So he says, listen, Avraham Avinu had 400 chapters of Avodah Zarah. We have five, and I can't even figure out what's contained in these five, or the explanations of these five chapters. Because the problem is that he is a Babylonian, and he's living in Babel. And in Babel, they're speaking Aramaic. The Mishnah is written in Hebrew. In general, it's not a problem, because the Hebrew is understandable. Where it becomes an issue is where the Mishnah is describing particular objects, then it's very hard for someone in Babel to know what they're speaking about in Eretz Yisrael. He's using a Hebrew word for something that doesn't match up with what they have in Babel. The item's called something else in Aramaic. And that's exactly what's happening over here, which is Umay Kasha. What's the problem? Diktoni Rabbi Meir Omer, Af Dekel Tav, Chatzav V'Niklas, Asur Limkor Le'Ovdei Kochavim. Dekel Tav is something that we can understand, because Dekel Tav sounds like Dekel Tov. Sounds like you can't sell him Dekel Tov Dulu Mizvinan, Ha Dekel Bish Mizvaninan. You're not allowed to sell him a good palm tree, but a bad palm tree, you're allowed to sell him. Vatznan. Don't we have a Mishnah upcoming? Ein Mochrim Lehem B'Mechubar LeKarka. Now let's sell them anything attached to the ground. That we'll get to on Daf Chof, which is the restriction of Lo Tichanein, not giving them any hold in the land of Israel. So you're not allowed to sell them anything that's attached to the ground, because that gives them a hold in the land itself. Given that, how could you distinguish between good palm trees and bad palm trees? You can't sell them anything that's attached to the ground. Amalei, my Dekel Tav. What does it mean, Dekel Tav? Peirot Dekel Tav. It means the fruits of the Dekel Tov. Chenamaravuna Peirot Dekel Tav. So that the fruits over here that we're speaking about are the fruits of the Dekel Tav. And so here, it's not the question of whether you can sell them the Dekel or not sell them the Dekel. It's whether you can sell them the fruits of these palm trees. And the answer is, you cannot sell them the fruits from the Dekel Tav, from the species that's called Dekel Tav. You can't sell them the fruits from the Dekel Bish. So the Rashi explains over here that Shnei Minei Dekalim Heim. There are two different types of Dekalim. It would sound from here that the Dekel Tav and Bish have to do with the quality of fruit that's coming off of them. Which is, a Dekel Tav is one that produces either high quantity or high quality dates. And the Dekel Bish is one that produces low quality. So the high quality ones you can't sell them to, because those are the ones they would use in either decorating or worshipping the Avodah Zarah. The lower quality ones, it seems like you can't sell them, or that species is not something that they use, whether it's their shape or the fact that they are low quality. For that reason, you can sell them to them because they won't use them in Avodah Zarah. Okay, Chatzav, Kisba. And Rashi over here brings that two explanations what Kisba is. It says either Mint Marim, it's a type of date, Kmo Malat Taska de Kisve, Ve'it de Amre, Hainu Chatzuva, Shebo Ticheim Yoshua et Aretz, Ve'esev Na'ehu. Others suggest that it is the plant or the growth that Yeshua used in order to delineate the borders in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara in Baba Kama, as well as in Baba Metzia, says that when Yeshua divided up the land, he used this chatzav, which is a type of weed or a wild growth, but it grows straight up and it roots straight down. So it's hugely beneficial in terms of setting borders, because it maintains the line in where it was planted. So they use the chatzav in order to do that. And he says that it's an esiv na'eh. It's a nice weed, or it's a nice green vegetation. And therefore they might use it in the service of the Avodah Zarah. And that's the chatzav that we're speaking about here. So two possibilities of what the chatzav is. It's either a type of date, or it is the thing that is used to delineate the land. And then Bali Tosavot bring both explanations of Rashi. And he says he favors heavily, saying that it is the chatzav that Yeshua used in Tichei Medaretz. The Bali Tosfot over here again say there are two types of kisba. So the kisba, that date, that's what Rashi brought the proof for. There's also a kisba which is used to tichei medaretz. But then he brings interesting from the Oroch. The Oroch translates it here, perish, kol chatzva da'ocha shu ya'arot divash. It's a forest of honey. Kaneh shegadal bo tzukra. It is a cane in which sugar grows. It is sugar cane. And you can see something similar in the Rambam, where in the Perish Mishnah notes, where he says, chatzav kanim, Shosimehen Sukra. Again, he also, like the Aruch, says that it's sugar cane. Then they say Nicholas. He had the Rav Dimi Amar Rav Chama Bar Yosef, when he came back from Eretz Yisrael, called it Koraiti. Rashi over here also brings two explanations. Either Koraiti is a type of fruit, or Yeshomrim Afrurit. It means a dust, like the Marin Yoma, which says Korat Levana, which means like a granule of Livona, or a pinch of Livona. So that's what he says, the korait over here might be the karte glavona. It says, vein nira. Tim kain amai lo yode. That's the case. Why doesn't he know what it is? The koraiti or korat levona is something that's mentioned in the Mishnah and the Gemara, and something that Abaye would have been familiar with. The Mishnah says niklas, and I have no idea what it is. Vatamar koraiti lo yadinan. You told me it's koraiti, and I don't know what that is either. So you translated the word, and even the translation, I don't know what it is. My hanitlan. How did you help us out? All you did was bring me another word that I don't know what it means. I helped you out. When you go to Eretz Yisrael, Amartlu Niklas Velo Yade. You'll ask them, what's the Niklas? They'll have no idea what you're talking about. Amartlu Koraiti. Then you said, I'm Koraiti Viyade. Don't know what you're talking about. Become a Chavulach, and they'll show you what it is. So I helped you now, because now you have another word to use when you go up to Eretz Yisrael, and you'll be able to find out what exactly this Niklas is. But here you see clearly what the problem is. You have Hebrew words that are being used in the Mishnah, that they have no clue what they mean in Bavel. So they went to Eretz Yisrael, Rav Dimi goes to Eretz Yisrael, turns out in Eretz Yisrael, they also don't know what Niklas is. They translate it to Koraiti. So they call it Koraiti now in Eretz Yisrael, but at least they know that Niklas is Koraiti. But the problem is in Bavel, they still don't know what Koraiti is, because that's again a word of Eretz Yisrael. So he says to them, I helped you, because that's a word that is still in use in Eretz Yisrael. So you can ask them about Koraiti, you can't ask them about Niklas. But in the end, you see the problem that they had in terms of the five prokim of Avodah Zarah, they didn't know what it was. Is all the items here in the Mishnah are Hebrew items or Hebrew words. And therefore, every time we're looking at something, we're trying to translate it. We saw that with Itstroblin. They're trying to explain, what is an Itstroblin? Oh, they have to translate it. Tornita. Each one of these words, they're translating to figure out what it is or what's meaning in Bavel. Bali Tosfot in the end here, Umaskanad Ach Shmaita, Kotav Rabaruch Bar Rabbi. So the Rabaruch says that the conclusion of our sugya here is, Kaven the Shart Varim Peushan Asur. If a person specifies they're going to use it for Avodah Zarah, it's Asur. Im Kain Asur the Olam, Nimkor the Komer, Obey Kochavim Levona. You cannot sell frankincense to a priest. Davi Kamo Peushan, the Davar Baruro, the Letakrovit Bahile. The only reason he's buying frankincense is because he's using it for Avodah Zarah, even when he doesn't specify. It's implicit in the fact that he's a priest buying Levona, that is what he's going to use it for. Over mishum lifnei iver. Begam asur limkor sha'ava l'shum ovei kochavim b'yomein. You can't sell wax to a non-Jew on his holiday. Aval vaday b'shayamim mutar. But on other days it's fine. Because on their holiday they use the candles in the worship or in the avodah zarah. On the days that are not, they're using them to light their houses, and that's fine. V'chein otam klei ovei kochavim sh'Yisrael konem. L'achar shepagmo ovei kochavim b'bitlo. Yikol makom asur limkor ovei kochavim kamo shehu. So even though Jews are allowed to buy used items from the non-Jews, even if they were items that were used in Avodah Zarah, once the Goy is selling it, he's showing you that he has no interest in this item being used for Avodah Zarah anymore. He's in essence being mevatel its utility as a use in Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, you can't sell that back to them because just because it has a little ding in it or it has a little problem with it, that won't stop them from using it with Avodah Zarah. So if they sell it to you, the fact that it has something wrong with it, plus they're selling it to you, is indicative, is mivatalit from Avodah Zarah. But when you sell it to him, and it's an item that's used in worship, you can't sell it to me, even if it has something wrong with it. V'hachi nami, svarim psulim, aruim l'tifla, bebeit ovedat kochavim, asur limkor lahem l'komrim. Svarim that are pasul, you cannot sell it to them, because they'll use it for the wrong purposes in the Beit Avodah Zarah. I'm not sure what he's speaking about here. I don't know if he means a Sefer Torah that is pasul. You can't sell it to them because they make fun of it or they do proper things with it. Or does that mean to sell it to them because they're going to use it, quote unquote, as the Old Testament. And that's a problem because they're going to use it in their service or they're going to be a part of their service. And therefore, it's problematic. And tifla here is a lashon sagi nohor. Doesn't mean literally tifla. It just means that he's calling the whole service tifla. And the problem is you can't sell them holy books, even if they're psulim, because they're going to use it in their service. You can't even sell it to a layperson, because the only purpose of buying such items is to use them in the service of the Avodah Zarah, or the service of the church, the way the Bali Atos Vod is speaking about. And therefore, you can't sell it to him, because all he's going to do is pass it along to the priest. And therefore, you know that when you're selling it, it's going straight to Avodah Zarah. So these are limitations on what you can't sell to these individuals based on our sugya, either where they specify it's for Avodah Zarah, or it's obvious that it's going to Avodah Zarah. That's either because the purchaser is a priest, or the nature of the item that you're selling is that it's going to be used in Avodah Zarah. All of those are problematic in terms of selling them. Makom shnagulim kor behema dakad ovdei kochavim, places where they have the practice of selling quote-unquote light animals to the ovdei kochavim, mochrim, then you're allowed to sell them. These are animals that are not ra'ui for work. These are animals that are generally for their milk, for their shearings. They are animals that have utility, but generally their utility is not in the realm of heavy labor. Makom shnagul shalodim kor, places where they have the minhag not to sell it, ain't mochrim. Then you can't sell it. You don't have a right to deviate from the minhag makom. This mishnah is also found in the Gemara in Pesachim. And over there it says, al tishaneh minhag, that you're not allowed to deviate from that which is the practice of that location. Here the Tosfot points out that the mishnah does not make a distinction between whether he already owns a behemah or doesn't own a behemah. We are not allowed to sell it to him, which is strange because before, when we spoke about Lifnei Iver by Obed Kochavim, or giving them things that facilitate Avodah Zarah, we said that if they already has a behemah, he already has that item, and he doesn't need this, there's no problem of Lifnei Iver, lo titen michshol. So why over here, where he already owns an animal that he could possibly sleep with, or he could possibly have bestiality with, why is it that there is a restriction? So the Baal Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Yehuda, the Shani Reviyah, Shumitaveh Lechol Behemah Behemah. That is different by animals because each one is a new opportunity. It's a new companion. And therefore you can't say just because he has one behemah, the next behemah will not facilitate or cause him to sin even more. This will be the topic of the upcoming dapim. We really won't touch on it today. It'll be really the dapim afterwards, which is that in no place are you allowed to sell them heavy duty animals. Animals that are used for their labor, for their strength. Those animals you may not sell to them. That is true of agalim, visayachim, shlemim, ushburim. Doesn't matter if it's a calf, a colt, whether they are healthy, or there's something wrong with them, you can't sell them. Now, obviously the calf and the colt are not ra'ui li'avodah now. It's only when they grow up will they be ra'ui li'avodah. Despite that, they're still restricted. Shlemim is obvious. Shburim is even if they have something wrong with them, broken, where they won't be able to do work, we still don't allow it. Just from a general perspective, it would seem that the chachamim are gozer across the board, that no matter what the animal is, that you can't sell it, because we're worried about you selling the animal that is healthy and ra'oi to do avodah. And you can see something similar in Rashi explains the reason as being gazrubu rabbanon, duma atale chlufe, va'atu le mizbanu gdolim vishleimim aruim le melacha. It's a gezeiruatu. Whereas the Baal Tosafot say, similar to Rashi, but then he also says, "Eshlamar the Shvurim ki chazalu alma bebeit Obed Kochavim sabre the Shleimim nim mikaru ubeit Obed Kochavim nishtabru." The people see it there; they'll think they were sold as a Shleim, and then later on it became Shavur in the Beit Obed Kochavim, and for that reason, it's not permissible because people will come to a mistaken conclusion about it. The Gzeira is not even about Atu Shleimim, it's because people assume these were Shleimim when they were sold, and only became Shvurim in the house of the Oved Kochavim. And in that way, the Baal Tosafot differentiate between different types of animals, for instance, like a para, which the Gemara later on is going to say, you could sell it to a goy because it's used for Shechita. And even though the para hangs around for a long time, the para itself is not used for heavy labor or for work. It's used sometimes for work, but its primary purpose is for its meat. And therefore, if somebody sees a para with a goy, even if it hangs around for a long time, they're going to assume it was sold for the meat purposes, not for the work purposes. And that is not true by the behemot takot, as the Tosafot points out in the previous Tosafot. By behemot takot, they are generally kept around for their annuity stream, which is their shearings or their milk. They're not primarily sold for shechita, because there are types of animals that you bring up and you keep around for a long duration. Therefore, people are going to assume if you sell these behemah dakah, we're not going to assume the person's purchasing it for shechita. Since it's not purchasing it for shechita, it remains under this isur, and you can't sell it to them because the primary purpose is to keep it around. So that, for that reason, now you have three different categories of animals. Behemot gasot, which are work-oriented animals, those you can't sell for what the Gemara will tell us later. There are large animals that are sold primarily for shechita, like a para, and that can be sold even though they're going to hang around for a while. Everybody thinks that they're going to be for shechita. Now, by the behemot gasot, even shvurim are resurim because the person will assume that they were sold for melacha originally, and then they became broken in the house of the goy. By para, nobody's going to assume that because nobody really buys a para for work. And then you have the behemot dakot, which the minog is to make them a sore, and you cannot assume they're sold for shechita because their primary purpose is for the shearings or milk that they give off on an annual basis. Rabbi Yehuda matir b'shvura. Rabbi Yehuda, it would make sense and it's logical and say that you could sell them a shvura because the shvura can't do the work, and therefore you're not going to have the problems that you're going to run into in the case of the chachamim. Although you could understand why the chachamim would be gozer shvura atu shleima. That's either because you're going to see it with the goy and say it's shvura, but it was sold to him when it was a shleima, or the problem that people are just not going to understand the difference or make any distinction between them. Ben Betera matir b'sus. Ben Betera allows you to sell a sus. Rashi over here just generally notes that's because a sus is not used for work, it's used for riding on. And we have a principle, chai no se et atzmo, that a person carries themselves or helps to carry their weight, and therefore there's no problem, at least midoraita, to carry a human being on something, and then riding the horse is only an isur de rabbanan, not an isur de oraita. That's what Rashi notes over here. And the Tanakam or the Rabbonon who argue on Ben Betera say that a sus can be used for different things. And there are certain times where the sus is used for things that are actually a burden or a carrying on the animal. And that's what provides the problem. The Palaitos would ask, how do you know that's the reasoning that the Rabbonon disagree with Ben Betera? Why don't you say they possibly hold like Rabbi later on who says the problem with the sus is the fact that it's a clay zion. It's a weapon. And you're not allowed to sell them weapons or war items. So the Bible goes from the end, say the fact that the Rabbonon just put all behemoth gasod into one big category and didn't separate out sus shows that they believe that the reasoning is the same for all of them. And that is the problem here is masa and not a problem of clay zion. And the issue of clay zion is Rabbi's issue and not that which the Chachamim think in our Mishnah. Remember, from here you would conclude, the Sura Lekka, Minhagahu, the Ika, with regards to the Behema Daka, that there's only a practice not to sell it. It's a custom, but it is not a sur at all. Gemara says, Eicha denoig isur, noig. Eicha denoig heter, noig. Whatever you have a minhag that not to do it, you don't do it. The place that you have a minhag to do it, they do it. Biramini, isn't there Mishnah coming up in the next parak, which says, Ima midim behema, bepundakot shel ovdei kochavim. You're not allowed to leave your animal alone in the inn with the Ovei Kochavim, chashudim al revia, because they are chashud on bestiality, and you're leaving your animal there is a problem of lifnei iver lo titen michshol, or you are in essence facilitating the ability for this person to perform bestiality, which means that the problem with selling them a behemat daka should not be just an issue of minhag, it should be an issue of isur. If your animal is there, and then they would sleep with your animal, if you sell them the animal, you're also facilitating his ability to perform bestiality. And so why isn't there a problem of selling it mipnei ha'isur? Forget about minhag. So I'm a Rav. Rav solves the problem in the following manner, which is, makom she'itiru limkor, itiru liyachid. Makom she'asru liyachid, asru limkor. So over here, Rav has two formulations. Rashi points out the reason he formulated it differently in each section is because one of them references the Mishnah, and one of them references the Mishnah later on, which is, b'makom she'itiru limkor, which is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, in the place where they allowed them to sell it, hetir liyachid. Along with that was a heter to allow them to be alone with the animals. That means that the reason we allow you to sell in that place is because that's the minhag. But the minhag was also premised in the fact that they allowed them to be alone with the animals. We had no chashad of revi'ah in that location. Makom she'asru liyachid, in places where they didn't allow yichud, which is the Mishnah coming up later on, then asru limkor. That is why in our Mishnah it is asur to sell it to them, is because of the yichud. So Rav connects between the two issues, which is that the minhag was precipitated or connected to the isur of yichud. The only place where you can have a minhag to allow one to sell the animal is in a place where they didn't worry about revi'ah. In a place where they did worry about revi'ah, then the practice would be to restrict it. So Rav connects the two together. Chashad revi'ah is what is driving the case over here. Tosfot over here has a question as to why the Gemara doesn't bring up a question from an upcoming Mishnah where you're allowed to sell behema daka to the kutim. And there, the Mishnah has the same thing. Places that have a minhag to sell it to them. Plus, we have a minhag not to sell to them. And by the kutim, we don't have this worry about bestiality. And if the connection here of the minhag is to the yichud, then by kutim, there shouldn't have been this practice at all. It should have been mutar the gamre. Tosu Avot in the end just leaves it as a tzarechiyu, and he says the Gemara is going to reject Rav in the end anyway, so we don't have to answer the question. But he just leaves it as a question that the Gemara could have gone in that direction as well. Rabbi Elazar Omer, af b'makom shasru liyached, mutar limkor. Even in places where they restricted being alone with the animals, you're still allowed to sell it to them. My taimo, what's the reason? Ovi kochavim chas al behem tosh lo teaker. Ovi kochavim worries about his animal that it will not become impotent. It will lose its capacity to reproduce if there is bestiality performed with it. So here, in the case where he owns the animal, he won't perform bestiality with it because there's too much risk in basically ruining the animal or its ability to reproduce. That's not worth the risk, and therefore he won't engage in bestiality. On the other hand, for a Jew's behemoth that he's parking in the pundak, in the inn, over there he has no monetary interest in this, and therefore he's willing to sleep with the animal. So it's a possibility that the two are completely independent of each other. The restriction to leave it alone with the inn owner is because it's your behemoth. That's exactly the problem. It's your animal, and he has no functions about sleeping with your animal, because if it gets ruined, it's your problem, not his problem. His own animal, he does worry about sleeping with it, because he's not willing to risk the loss of the animal in this situation. Rav also backed away from his position, or basically in the end, says the same thing that Rabbi Elazar says. He makes the same statement that Rabbi Elazar says, which is a Ovid Kuchavim is not willing to risk his behemah, and because he's not willing to risk his behemah, he won't sleep with the behemah, so if you sell it to him, it's not a problem. Once he gains ownership over it, there's no question. The problem is only when he does not gain ownership over it, then we worry about ichud. And so now you can separate out the issues. The minhag of selling it is a minhag, whether you sell behemah takav, because the possibility that would lead to selling of behemah gasot. So do we have a blanket restriction against selling them animals? Or is the minhag that it is mutar to sell behemot takav because you don't have the problems of behemot gasot? There's only restriction against behemot gasot. But in terms of the inn, that's later on, everybody agrees that you can't leave him alone in the inn with the animal because of the problem of bestiality. So in the end, since the Oved Kochavim is chasal zbemto, you can sell it to him because there's going to be no problem with neiver because he won't perform bestiality with his own animal because he'll lose out and ruin his own animal. When it comes to losing money, he'll hold back, and therefore there's no problem with selling it to him. The problem in the pundak is that it's your animal, and he doesn't care about your animal, and therefore he is chashud al-rivya or al-bishtiality. In that instance, it is a problem of lifnei-iver, and you can't give him the right to be miyached with the behema. So even though there's a restriction of yichud with the behema, there's a chashad of rivya, that will not carry over into the ownership of the animal, because if you sell him the animal, he won't perform that because it'll ruin his animal, or there's a risk it'll ruin the animal, and that's not a risk he's willing to take. I'm going to stop here at the two dots on the top of Tet Vav Aleph.